This week, when superstitions take over an NHL player in the most frivolous way. And it was ridiculous and so fantastic all at the same time. Paper, rock, scissors, or what do you say? Rock, paper, scissors. We'll get into it. Dealing with the hard stuff on the Chirp. Plus, Brian Burke, when he talks, he gets your attention. What did he say? Who did he trade? Which media member is he calling out? Whether he's in the media or working for a team, he knows how to gather an audience. And this week, that audience includes you as Brian Burke stops by the Chirp with Darren Millard. Roll up, Bobby.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know. Don't say anything stupid.
You guys are sensitive over there.
What are you going to do? You!
It is!
Shut up!
Hey, everybody. It's the Chirp Podcast, getting you ready to go from the home office in Las Vegas. And we're living in the moment this week as we go outdoors, take the game to Lake Tahoe for a couple of games, Boston and Philadelphia. And, of course, the Vegas Golden Knights hooking up with the Colorado Avalanche. A lot about this show is going to involve the Golden Knights because there is a renaissance story taking place with Marc-Andre Fleury. And we'll also get into the gold helmets that the Golden Knights wore last week. Did you like them? Did you not? It's so Vegas. That's the term we use around here. It's so Vegas. And I thought it was spectacular. I didn't even know until they came out for the national anthem that they were going to wear those things. So it was even a surprise to us on the broadcast. But as we record this on 02-15-21, it's Doghouse Day for people around the world because it's the Doghouse Day in the sense that people who failed on Valentine's Day. And I'm happy that Bob Bender is here because I was concerned that you would have stubbed your toe on Valentine's Day.
Luckily, Darren, my wife-to-be is not a big fan of Valentine's Day, so I can avoid the doghouse every single year. Kept it simple. Watch your nights and the Avalanche game on Sunday night. Got a pizza. And those two teams, they got three more games coming. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Before we get to the game, did you do the heart-shaped pizza? Or did you do like the regular pizza?
Well, the heart-shaped pizza is a little extra coin, so I got to keep it.
And it's a ripoff. You don't get as much pizza.
Absolutely. No, I steer clear of that. Regular pie.
Okay. We get three more games as we record this. It's after game one of the Colorado Avalanche and the Vegas Golden Knights. We get three more games. This is hockey. Like, we saw a 1-0 game between the VGK and Anaheim last week. And when we saw a 1-0 game, the Golden Knights against the Avalanche, you would have left that rink thinking they were two totally different sports, never mind games, because there was such a difference in intensity between the Avs and the Golden Knights.
The game on Sunday night, 1-0, if you're trying to get someone to be a hockey fan, just plant them right in front of the television and have them watch these two teams play, because the chances, the skill, the speed, really, to me, they're the top two teams in the NHL. Tampa right there also. So it is fun. And to get three more games of this and probably, you know, a bunch more in the playoffs, likely, it's going to be great.
And just think, Colorado is coming off their COVID layoff. The Golden Knights were playing 3-4 at the very end of that, 4-6. They were a little tired. Wait till they get some time to just rest up and get ready for it. That Tahoe game is going to be outstanding. Vegas and Colorado, right where Pittsburgh used to be, being a number one contender. And now they're trying to hold on and extend that window. And part of that is Jimmy Rutherford resigned as general manager. So they've gone through some changes there. The president of hockey operations is now Brian Burke, and he's gone from national TV to his sixth organization. His hiring as president, Bob, a bit of a surprise to some, even to Brian himself, when he gets into it today. He's going to work in Pittsburgh with general manager Ron Hextall, and it may go down as the great 1-2 punch when it comes to intense individuals in a front office. But Brian in particular, he knows how to attract an audience. And today that audience is going to be just really treated to an interesting conversation, because Brian loves sharing his opinion, as you know, Bob. But Brian is also a guy that can take it up a notch. This, like, you're still going to get Brian's opinion in this conversation, but it's a different type of interview when you listen to it.
He was very thoughtful. He was very relaxed. Maybe that's because you're interviewing him. I'm not blowing smoke up your ear end. I thought the interview was about 35 minutes long. It's not going to feel 35 minutes long. It was very conversational. It was very well done. And on the best part to me, yeah, I don't know Brian very well, you know, cross paths here and there. The best part is he gets into how the tie style, not tying the tie, has evolved. And is he going to tie the tie in Pittsburgh. So it was a great interview, and I look forward to getting feedback from our listeners. I think they're going to enjoy it.
So subscribe, leave us a comment, leave us a rating on the podcast platform that you subscribe to, that you visit. We really want to hear from you and get your reaction to conversations like this with Brian Burke, who puts a bow on it or ties things up at the end, talking about everything from attire to how he's going to approach this position in Pittsburgh and whether or not people should be nervous. But the most important thing is family. Here's Brian Burke on The Chirp with Darren Millard. So tell me where this came from. When did you get the first indication that this was a possibility?
Well, I've been friendly with David Morehouse, who's the CEO, for years and years and years. And you go to league meetings and some of these guys that work for other teams ignore you. They don't talk to the GMs or the executives of other teams. But he's always made a practice of making friends with those people. So I was going through the list of candidates with him. I was not on that list. I was just telling him what I thought of this candidate, that candidate, which it's flattering because a number of owners have done that with me in recent years. You know, you've been in the business, you know what's going on. So he was speaking to Mario that night, and Mario said, how come you know so much about all of these guys? And he said, well, I've been talking to Brian Burke. And Mario said, Burkey, we should be talking to him. So the next thing you know, they're talking to me about a job. So it came completely out of left field, but I couldn't be more excited or happier.
How long did it take you to get your game face back on?
Well, my daughter's told me I'm already yelling at the TV like I used to when I was a GM, you know. God damn, that's a penalty. Catch him, do something. So, you know, when you're a broadcaster, you might be interested in certain players and you might want a certain team to win on a given night. But when it's your team, it's, you know, it's life or death, and not figuratively, not literally, but that's how important the games are. And I love feeling that feeling again. I'm yelling at the TV.
Will you move to Pittsburgh right away? I know your daughters live in Toronto, so, and the border issue going back and forth, how much does that complicate it?
Well, it complicates it. The answer is yes. I've always moved wherever I've worked. I think it's very important for people in Calgary or Vancouver or, you know, now Pittsburgh, to know that the executives are moving there and they want to be part of the community and they want to fit in right away. So I'm scheduled to look at real estate early next week. So yes, I will buy a place there. I'm going to keep the place here though and do somewhat like the commute I did with my daughters from Calgary, where I got them like every other weekend, 8, 9, 10 days a month. And then, but I can't do that obviously right now. Right now it's a 14-day quarantine. So we agreed, we had a family meeting. We agreed I'm going to go down for a month and then we'll see if the border's eased up. But I'm not going to go without seeing them for more than a month, even though it's ironically my older kids I haven't seen now in a year almost.
Right.
I'm not going to do more than a month. I'll come back and do the quarantine and see them and then go back to Pittsburgh.
You're a great dad. But as far as the house hunting goes, you're going to measure the garage before you buy this time?
Your memory's too good. for people who don't remember that story, my neighbors in Calgary thought, well, Calgary Flames have just hired an imbecile because I bought a house and my Ford F-150 did not fit in the garage. So I called the builders, good guys, Italian guys, really good guys. And I said, my truck doesn't fit. And they said, you're doing it wrong. I'm like, how can you park it straight in? It didn't fit. So they had to come back and build a little, like a, they call it a beehive, like a little cubicle that stuck out into my backyard where the nose of my truck would go when I came home at night so I could close the back door. But my neighbors got a real good laugh out of that when I first moved there. In fact, one of them came up to me on the street and said, not the sharpest knife in the drawer, are you? The Flames brought in a guy who came and measured a garage. So yes, I'll measure it this time.
How well do you know Sid?
Well enough to talk to just over the years, you know, like every time I see him, I hold my thumb and my forefinger apart and I say,
yes,
this close to being a duck. And we've had a good talk about it a couple times. He said, look, I've had a good career. You've had a good career. It worked out for both of us. But, you know, I was saying this on TV the other day, I've had players that played for me that are in the Hockey Hall of Fame and should have been and belong there. You know, Scott Niedermeyer, Chris Pronger, Mark Messier, Tamu. These are all guys that are in the Hall. I've never had, in my view, a player as good as Sidney Crosby till this point in my career. So I'm really, really pleased to finally be reunited with him. And, you know, just watching him last night, this guy, he's still got it.
I think back to 2010 too, and you were that close in Vancouver too. So it must be nice to be on the same side as that guy.
Yeah, and that of course he scored the. I was GM of Team USA, and he scored the golden goal to beat us in the gold medal game. Just a great individual play. But I will remind people that the Canadian referee kicked the puck to Jerome McGinley that set that play in motion.
Kicked.
Well, it kind of hit him.
Yeah, it kind of hit him. I've heard it described that you're going to be sort of a bumper, whatever term you want to use, between the business side, ownership, and Ron. Is that fair?
Well, I think the president, first off, revenue support's always been a critical part of the GM's job, whether the GM accepted that or not. So we've never had a firewall between the business side and the talent side. So what we call a talent side, where you draft and trade for players, coaches, that's the talent side. The suit side is the other side. We call those guys suits. Mm-hmm. We've never had a firewall. So if you've got a guy who's reluctant about renewing a suite and it will help to talk to Brian Burke or help to talk to Mike Sullivan, we're going to arrange that meeting. So, yes, it's revenue support. It's community outreach. I think a lot of the speaking that I can do to take it off Hexie's plate is important. Buffer between ownership and the team or between David and the coaches, whatever. In Calgary, kind of all of the above. But I think the number one thing is you try and take as much off the GM's plate. So, for example, our American League team is in Wilkes-Barre. And I don't know if the schedule, they're just getting going and sorted out. But in a normal year, you would want someone from the front office to go to Wilkes-Barre at least once a month, and maybe more. So what I would say to Brad for living in Calgary is, what's your schedule this month? What do you want to do? And if he said, well, I want to go with the big club when we go on that road trip, I would go to Stockton. So I would base my schedule on the GM's preference. And that's what I'll do with Hexie. Say, Hexie, what do you want to do this month? And I'll fill in behind you. So it worked really well in Calgary. It'll work with Hexie. I really like him.
Do you know Hextall really well, or you getting to know
him? Yeah. No, I wouldn't really well be exaggerating, but you keep in touch over the course of your career, the way I do things. So I interview 24/7. So people don't even know they're interviewing for a job. I used to go to junior games at 5 o'clock, not at 6 o'clock, like most guys do. I'd go see one coach. So see the coach from Owen Sound, then go see the other coach from Peterborough, 10, 15 minutes. But all that time I'm filing away, that's a top young guy. American League games, you go at 5 o'clock, talk to both coaches. Go at 4:30, talk to both coaches, have a coffee. So to me, I've tried to build relationships with lots of people in the game over time. What impresses me most about Hexie is his intensity. Like that intensity that you all saw as a player, there are guys who are intense players that are not intense executives. He's not one of them. He's intense. And I like that because that's what I am too. And he's bright. He did a really good job in Philly. I'm really excited about working with him.
What do you know now, or what would you take from your first couple of years in the league to give you a little bit of a jump start, like now that your jobs are falling from the trees?
Well, this one here to me is I had concluded I was offered a presidency of hockey operations with an NHL team 2 years ago at the draft, which I turned down, and for a lot of reasons. Then nothing happened. And, you know, guys are calling you and asking you, who'd you hire as GM? And you're thinking, well, I'm sitting right here. And nothing materializes. So you start to think, okay, I'm done. There will come a day in every executive's life when a team no longer offers him money to work. And that I dread that day. I'd like to turn this into a 10-year deal with Pittsburgh. But that day will come. It comes for everybody. And that's the day that I start doing more charity stuff. I just can't imagine being retired. And I like the deal at Sportsnet. I love working there. And so I was kind of resigned to the fact, okay, the hockey team side's done. The league side's done. So now you're a broadcaster. Be the best broadcaster you can possibly be. And that's what I was doing. When this opportunity came along, I'm ecstatic, thrilled.
Do you feel pressure to take Johnson and Friedman's calls more because you were colleagues of theirs for a couple of years?
No, because I don't really like either one of them. So, no. No, they're good guys.
Will that be different, though, now that you're on the – because you've never spent a long time in the media. You've dabbled in it, but this is the longest stretch before going back to hockey.
Yeah, it'd be 3 years in May it'd be that I've been doing this, and I've worked really hard at it, and I think I'm much better at it than I was when I started. But, yeah, it was the longest one. I did a year in the media before this, working for first for CBC, then – well, first the draft for TSN, then the World Cup for CBC, and then back to TSN for labor coverage. So during the 2004-05 lockout. So that's combined of 4 years almost in it. And I've enjoyed it. I think I bring a perspective that's useful, but you know, I'm yelling at the TV again. That's the key to this whole thing. I'm yelling at the TV again, which means I'm in the fight.
What did you learn while you were in the media about the game or the sport?
Well, not again, because it was my second tour. The first time I was shocked at how hard people worked. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of NHL personnel think, well, Darren Millard just shows up and talks hockey. Mm-hmm. They don't know the research that goes into it. And I've given this example before. My typical day was 4 hours before work, 4 hours of research. So we get up 7:30 because I used to get up really early. And I will, now that I'm back with the team, I'll start my 5:30 wake up call. 6 o'clock in the office routine. But this network job has screwed that up because I stay up so late. And then you get home and you know what it's like. You can't go to bed right away after you do a game. Your head's turned. So anyway, get up 7:30, then from 8 till noon, kitchen table, NHL Network on TV or Sportsnet, Fan 590 on the radio, while you read through all the clips from SportsScan. So yep. It starts off with, you know, Anaheim and then Arizona. And some days Anaheim will have 3 articles, Boston will have 6, Colorado will have 12, but it's 300 or 400 pages. And I'm a pretty good reader, but that's a lot to read. So you do that, then you go to work, like, you know, on game days. So if I do a 7 o'clock game, I'm usually in there by 1. I leave my house by 12:30. And then what you're doing is phoning, checking things, talking to GMs. Is there any truth to this? And then preparing more notes and then keep getting shorter and shorter, the notes you write to yourself so that when you get on stage, you can just use bullet points and you don't have to see the whole text. Say, well, here, I want to show how Millard and Burke play this 2-on-1. Second thing is for a Wednesday night game, typically on Monday night, you're texting your producer from the game you're watching. So if Montreal plays Monday night and you're doing them on Wednesday night, you're texting the producer during the game, 2 minute mark of the third period, there's a high hit that should have been a penalty. I want to show that. So they're already cutting tape for you for the intermissions 48 hours before the game. It's pretty impressive how hard everyone works.
What are you looking forward to doing with Pittsburgh? Or what do you think that maybe there's a tweak here or there that they need?
Well, first things first, you don't know your team until you know your team. And I know it sounds stupid, but let me elaborate on that. Mm-hmm. If you ask me about a player, if you ask me about Zach Aston Reese. I can tell you about Zach Aston Reese. I know where he played college. I know he played in Wilkes-Barre. I can give you, I know his height and weight, but I don't know him. And when you get into a team and you watch how hard guys practice and how they interact and how they travel, and you got to get your hands around your team. And we got plenty of time to do that before the trade deadline. But you don't know a team until you've actually worked for that team. And I remember going into Calgary thinking, I know this player. You know, I know this player. And then I sit down with the player. I'd be like, I didn't know him at all. Like, he's a much better guy than I thought. He's much more intense than I thought. He just says his body language is poor, but he is truly intense. Mm-hmm. So the first thing you do when you go into a new group is you listen. You talk to the coaches. You talk to the players. You watch the practices. But you listen a lot. And you figure out what your biggest needs are. I have a theory, but I'm not going to offer that until I know more.
How are you different than your first job?
Well, I hope I'm smarter, for God's sake. It's been 30 years. I mean, my first job was 92.
You got better stories.
Yeah, I got a book. it's worth a book. But no, there. I hope I'm smarter. When I was lucky because when I went to Hartford as a GM, I had worked under the late, great Pat Quinn. And that's like getting an MBA from any the best school in the world, from Harvard or Wharton or whatever the best business school is. I'll say MIT because my daughter went there. So I was lucky, and I played for Lou before that. And same thing, you know, you can't play for Lou and not acquire these manners of doing things a certain way, doing things the right way, being on time, being polite, working extremely hard, working in the weight room. Like Lou taught all these great championship habits, and then Pat the same thing. So I was lucky when I got to Hartford, but still, it was crazy. The owner and I didn't see eye to eye on much, and but it was that's where I did my first. My theory was, okay, I'm going to give this team a year, and then I'm going to set off an atom bomb. So at the end of that year is when I traded up and drafted Chris Pronger. End of the first year in Vancouver, I did the Sedin deal. End of the first year in Toronto, bought in Phil Kessel. So I've always had a theory. It started in Hartford. Get to know your team and then do something special. Show people, even if you're a non-playoff team, show them that, A, you can get things done, and B, you're going to jumpstart this team on the path to respectability. And that's what all those deals did.
This is a great job because you have some Hall of Famers. It's also a challenging job because those Hall of Famers are at the tail end. And you may have to manage through that with Ron. Is that something that you think about? And does that cause anxiety?
Well, we have two of the smartest owners in pro sports. And we discussed that in the interview process. I mean, when you interview for a job, I'm sure it's the same, Darren. When you went to work for Vegas, I'm sure you asked them as many questions as they asked you. And these are smart people. And they said, we want to see how far this group can get us. And then next year, we have to sit down after the season and figure out for next year, because Chris Letang's entering the last year of his contract. Evgeny Malkin's entering the last year of his contract. We have to have serious discussions about where we go from there. So they're not stupid people. They're brilliant people. They know that these problems are there, and they're coming. And that's part of the reason that they brought Hexie and me in to replace Jimmy Rutherford, is we got some serious work to do here. We need serious people to do it. But if you have ever looked at a hill and said that hill's too steep to climb, then you shouldn't be in this business, because I've never done that.
Are you still in a win now mode?
For this season, yep. We can do, we can add something. Hex and I were talking about it yesterday. He said, if I can add something that makes us better tomorrow, are we going to do that? I said, yeah, as long as we can afford it. We're like most other teams, we don't have a lot of cap room. So if we can afford it, yeah, like it's win now. But it's win now, and we'll take a look in the summer.
Ron was very patient in Philadelphia. Are you, I would call you more of a hybrid. How does that work?
Well, I think there comes a time when you, and this is what Jimmy Rutherford gauged so beautifully, there's definitely a time where you shove all your chips in. And teams go through four phases. They crawl, then they walk, then they run, and then they sprint. And there's only three or four, maybe five teams that are truly sprinting. Some of them think they are. But teams with a legitimate chance at a championship, it's usually five or fewer. So your team has been sprinting since they came into the league. Washington Capitals are sprinting. Tampa's sprinting. St. Louis is sprinting. Oh, funny, three of those are champions. But you got to get to that point. And spending assets before you're truly equipped to sprint does not make a lot of sense. And that's why I say at the trade deadline every year, there's 16 teams add players and give up draft picks and try and get better. There's only one cup. I checked with the league again. They're only going to hand out one cup this year. I checked. I can promise you all. So that's the thinking you got to balance out. Jimmy knew when to put all the chips in, and he's got two rings from this tour of duty to show for it.
Okay, your opinion of the trade deadline, when you thought you were going to be working it on television to now being in the management side, do you think it'll be busy?
I hope so. I hope we plan to be in the thick of things, either in the playoff hunt or in the thick of things, for sure. I mean, we won last night, and you know, we take our team seriously. We're playing without five guys that are injured, including three defensemen. So we're pretty happy with the way our team responded last night, given the lineup that we were able to put out there. So, yeah, we intend to be busy with caution, with reason.
Does it bug you that people are bringing up old quotes of yours over the years and now using them as you take over Pittsburgh?
No, you're stuck with that in our line of work. I don't pay any attention to any of that. I don't even know what you're talking about for old quotes.
Like the Pittsburgh model. Remember when you said that day, you wanted to win, like that kind of thing, or
Yeah, well, Christine Simpson had some fun, brought up some of those rants when I was in Sportsnet for my next to last appearance on Wednesday. We're having fun with that. But other people have brought up, well, you said back in the fall that you thought Pittsburgh's window was closed. And I said, I'm not going to back away from anything I said in the past. I said it. I spoke the truth when I spoke then, and I'm not backing away from that. But my job then is to take the Pittsburgh Penguins team on paper, put it next to the Tampa Bay Lightning and say, are they as good as the Tampa Bay Lightning? Darren?
No.
Now, there's not a hockey person that would disagree with that. It's different, though. What I'm saying now is not changing my story. It's what can we do between now and the deadline that maybe we can win now. The mentality right now from ownership is, let's see what we can do with this group and try to win. And that's what Hexie and I are going to do.
I didn't realize that I got to answer that question. And then you answered it before I even got an opportunity to get it out.
Yeah. But you see, that's what... So someone either ignorant in the media would realize they're two different evaluations, right? Mm-hmm. Or someone who doesn't like me. Either way, I haven't read when I was in the business, I didn't read the media. I'm not going to anymore now. I've been doing it for 2.5-3 years now. And now I'm going to go back to my old ways. I've never learned a thing about hockey reading a newspaper.
How challenging is this compared to when you joined Calgary, when you were in Toronto, when Anaheim? Like, can you compare those hills?
Well, they're all different. Every job you take in hockey is different. So this would be my 16 plus the league, so my seventh job. Like, the most terrifying one was probably when I went to work for the league. I'd been a GM for 1 year. We have a brand new commissioner. And so I don't even know what the job is. Like, Gary laid it out for me in the interview process, but I ended up doing way more. When I wrote that chapter of the book, I'm like, how did I not collapse from exhaustion? The stuff I did for the league. But every team has benefits. Okay. So in my case, going to Anaheim, the late great Brian Murray had drafted two kids named Getzlaff and Perry. They're stepping in. I had a guy on the team named Robbie Niedermeyer who happened to have a brother who was an unrestricted free agent. We brought him in. So every team has challenges, but every team gives you some gems too. Here, you got some pretty big pieces on the chessboard. You're starting with some pretty big pieces. So now we got to see, can we complement them and see what we can accomplish this year with the group? And we'll worry about the summer's decisions next summer.
Did you write or publish the book too early?
Well.
Because you got a new chapter now.
Yeah, well, I'm already thinking that way, but I've had so much fun with the book, and like, I got stopped on the street today by four people. I had to go to the bank, trying to get everything in shape here to get out of town. Right. It's mm-hmm. daunting. And four people stopped me and said, congratulations, good luck in Pittsburgh. And two of them said, I loved the book. And that I said, I'm so glad. Like, you pay $25 for a book, you should enjoy it. And that's what I said. I'm really glad you enjoyed the book. Like, I'd hate to have someone come up to me and say, I didn't enjoy reading it. I understand people and say, I never liked you and I still don't like you, but I hope they enjoyed the book anyway. So these two people seem to.
What was the story in the book that maybe you hummed and hawed over the most about whether or not you should put in or not?
Well, I had a real bright line test on that, Darren. No story went in that book unless it was common knowledge to our team at the time. In other words, if I told you a story about Joe Smith, that's a story you could have heard from someone else on my staff or one of my players from that team. There's no secrets that were spilled, no stories that were told that happened behind closed doors, not one. And that was a bright line test. So I wasn't worried about getting sued. I wasn't worried about anyone being mad at me. These are things that happen that were witnessed by everyone in the management team and usually by the players.
You retire your earpiece from TV then? Did you hand it back in?
I never had my own. Well, yeah, they did have one for me at work. Well, the people at Rogers have been great. They're like, look, you've been terrific. The door's always open. And I think whenever you leave a job, because in hockey, when you leave a job, often the door is not open to come back. And usually it's don't let the screen door hit you in the ass on the way out. But here everyone's been, you know, if it does, they want me to have a long and successful stay in Pittsburgh, but they're like, if it doesn't work out, you'll always have a home here. So people have been very gracious about it.
Your producer on Wednesday, I know very well, Matt Marstrom. Give me an idea on his mind and his abilities, because I think he deserves some credit for managing some big personalities over the years.
Yeah, he's, well, the guy, Brian Spears, the guy that runs a show on Saturday night for Hockey Night, and Matt Marstrom, Marzi, runs a show on Wednesday. So we do our production call on Monday, and we start asking for stuff right then. And there's a game that night, we're going to be watching it. So we're texting him and calling him during the game. He's got the patience of a saint, but he's really organized. Like, if you ask for, I want that holding penalty at the 4-minute mark of the second period, you come into the studio on Wednesday, you've got it. It's right there and you can look at it again. So he's a really good guy, really organized, works his tail off. I like to work with him. I'm going to miss him.
I like to think that that Nick Dug and I kind of paved the way for his patience and made him ready for you.
Yeah, he's the only guy there with hair as white as mine too. Like,
good point.
He's a lot younger than I am. He shouldn't have white hair, but he does. That's probably because of you and Nikki.
Yeah, guaranteed. Well, we have a hand in that. Who's the first person you sit down with when you go to Pittsburgh, when you land?
Well, this is a terrible answer. You can't. With the protocols, I'm not going to be able to sit down with anyone. The number one priority when you take over a team is the coaching staff. Now, I've talked to Sid, I've talked to Sully. What we'll do is I'll say to Hexy, what's your priority? What meetings do you want? And I'll piggyback off of those, or we can do them together, whatever he wants. He's the GM. He's going to make those calls. And if he says, well, I'd like to meet with Sid alone to start, then that's what we're doing. If he wants to meet with the coaching staff alone to start, that's what we're doing. My job is to support him and give him guidance on what I think we should do. He's going to find out he has a lot more autonomy probably than he even thinks he does today.
Do you think they might be nervous though with you and Ron coming
in? They should be nervous. The only thing, what I saw last night was I was really happy with the way our guys worked. I thought we outworked them, and that's a team that doesn't get outworked very often. I was really happy with the persistence and tenacity. All the big guys played well. So no, I'm going in there. When you get a change at the top, there's always player change that comes after it. That's inevitable. And so guys should be nervous, because I don't think we're very patient people. That being said, we're not coming in with any pre-existing ideas. Like I said, you don't know your team till you know your team. So my advice to Hexy is let's go slow here. If something falls in our lap that makes us better, we'll do it. But let's get to know our players and our coaches better first. Because I am telling you, I'll give you an example. Matt Cook, who I really like as a person, got a nice note from him last night.
Oh, good.
When I got to Vancouver, I was told by people in management there that they didn't think he was smart enough to kill penalties and that he took too many selfish penalties. So I sat down with him, okay, Cookie, tell me what makes you tick. And then I watched him play. I'm like, he's smart enough to kill penalties. He'd be on the first unit killing penalties. He could take faceoffs. He would hit like a truck. The information I got from the organization, because sometimes you get jaded about a player. You don't like a player. The information I got, I'll give you another example. I get to Hartford back in 92. We have a defenseman named Mark Bergevin. My staff tells me if he's on our team, we won't win a game. So we cut loose Mark Bergevin. He only played another 15 years after that, or 16 years. And I had him back in Vancouver. But I remember that's the type of thing. You don't know your team till you know your team. And even when you get to the new job, sometimes they've turned their back on a player that you can salvage.
How have you got along with coaches over the years, your own coaches? Or how have you managed that relationship?
I leave the coaches alone. What I'd say about maybe two or three times in my whole career, did I go into a coach and say, this is what we're going to do. And that's after I suggested politely that we do it, and he didn't take the hint. And finally, I had to insist. But that only happened a couple of times.
Nice to see Sidney score on a shootout when you're cheering for him.
And I was jumping up and down. I was cheering for him. it's one time I was glad to see a shot from him go in.
Two questions. Do you have a black or a gold tie?
I have a black tie for funerals. I'll have to get a one that I would wear to games.
Okay. And now that you're doing it up regularly, will that continue?
Well, I haven't asked what David wants or if the owners want, but it's not going to be tied unless they insist I tie it.
I work with people. Dave Gosher, our play-by-play announcer, he doesn't wear his tie for rehearsals. He's like, it's the Berkey. I call it the Berkey. It's trademarked almost.
You know what? How it started though, it's just sheer laziness. Like, I'm not sophisticated enough to try and start a trend in fashion. So what happened was, when I worked for Pat starting back in '87, I would get to work at 6 o'clock in the morning. So when the Boston Bruins were open for business, so were the Vancouver Canucks. But I would go in jeans and a t-shirt, and I'd leave my house at 5:30, pitch black, raining usually, get to work, still pitch black at 10 to 6, 5 to 6, get in time to listen to the CKNW Sports, which came on right before the hour, and then I'd go into work. And then Pat would come in usually between 7 and 7:30, and we would spend however much time we needed. So I'd say, here, you need to get to Milwaukee and see these kids play, our farm team play, and league meeting coming up. We booked your travel for it, and I'm trying to sign David Bruce. So here's where I am on the money. So Pat had control over everything. I just did the day-to-day work, the execution. So then we'd finish. It might be 8 o'clock, might be 8:15, might be 8:30. I would go downstairs, work out, shower, shave, and put on a suit. All my suits were at work. So the last thing you're doing is you're putting on your tie. Well, why bother tying it till you get upstairs, right? So you come up with the tie, and then you stop, you forget about it. So then you don't tie it till you have a meeting where you need to tie it. And then if you don't have any important meetings all day, I remember tying it during the anthem a couple of times. And then finally, I just said, to hell with it. No one seems to mind. But when I got to the Sportsnet, they minded.
Yeah, just a little bit. Well, you got to have something to hook the mic onto. Hey, could you imagine back then when you were sitting with Pat that you would be that veteran guy working for his 16? Like, that's a long journey.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because before I went to Vancouver, I was a lawyer representing players, as you know, and I was close to going on my own. Like, I had enough clients that I was looking at office space outside of Boston. And I remember telling my dad I was taking the job with the Canucks, and he was like, you're out of your mind. You're about to start your own business. You're going to go to a team that hasn't made the playoffs in years and pay Canadian taxes and live 1,000 miles from anyone you know. I'm like, yeah, exactly. That's it. So I never thought, I remember thinking, first thing, when I got in the business, I wanted to work for an original six team. I wanted to win a Stanley Cup, and I wanted to do an expansion team. So I didn't get to do an expansion team, but I worked for a couple of original six teams and worked for an original six team and then won a cup, obviously. I never thought all the rest of it was kind of gravy. So to me, it was, if you'd asked me if I had a 30-year career, if that's what you're asking, I would have said no, I'm much shorter than that and go back and practice law.
We're both of an age where I can ask you this. How do you avoid being that old guy in the room and saying, well, you know what? I used to do it this way, because I get called that all the time here.
Yeah, well, you're the old guy on the front porch, right? Screaming at the kids to get off the grass. Yeah. Get off my lawn. I think what I've tried to do is be really progressive, because the guy I learned from, so everyone thinks Pat was this crusty old guy. Pat was a world-class innovator.
Beautiful.
Like, he was willing to try anything. We were the first team to scout on laptops. Like, you know what these people used to do? They would fill out a scouting form and mail it to the office. And then one of the EAs would have to enter it into the computer. And I remember saying to Dave Nonis, why do we have two steps? And Dave Nonis designed, he got a computer designer to do the software. And we gave each of the, I remember talking to Pat about it. He said, get them laptops. Now, back then, a laptop cost about $8,000 and weighed about 35 pounds. So we had to get 8 laptops and get them out to the scouts. And the scouts, you have to connect back in the day with the modem, remember?
Dial up,
And you had to do it after 11 o'clock at night when the phone rates went down. So these guys would be in wherever, Medicine Hat or you know, Brandon. And after the game, it's minus 40. The guys go to the bar. All the other scouts go to the bar. They're up in their hotel rooms doing and filing with these old modems. But within 18 months, every team in the league was doing the same thing. Pat was one of the first teams to have a strength coach. We had sleep experts, for God's sake, in 87. So to me, I've always tried to capture that from Pat. Anything that will give us an edge and help us win, I've been open to it. So like, I'm not like, well, in Anaheim, we were top six, bottom six. That model's outdated now. Now you got to do something different. So I think I'm pretty progressive. I'm not a huge analytics fan, but I understand the value they provide.
you know, you worked with Trees, Brad Tree Living, and now Ron Hextall. That's two of four general managers in the National Hockey League now who are former Brandon Wheat Kings. That's kind of strange, too. There's no real question there, but it's just an observation.
Yeah, it is. So who are they? Kelly
and Chevy. Tree.
Chevy, that's right. Yeah. I should know that. That's pretty impressive.
And Chevy and Trees played together for a little bit. Kelly was around the organization there, and Ron kind of paved the way. Before I let you go, when you look ahead, is this the last stop, or do you ever close the book on that?
Well, I hope it's the last stop, because my first impressions of the entire deal are that it's a dream job. Like when David called me and said, would you be interested in working? I'm like, this is like Green Bay Packers. This is like New York Yankees. And Canadians may not realize that, but that's the cachet that Pittsburgh has. Winning tradition, top owners, like top owners. Beautiful facilities, great fans. And it's one of the best sports. I think it's the best sports town in the country. You can argue Boston or Chicago, but I'll put Pittsburgh up against them. So you got great Steelers fans. You got great Pirates fans. It's really cool. And it's a growing city. So to me, when GMs sit around and drink beer and talk about great jobs, they talk about what I just talked about, and they talk about Pittsburgh. I was talking to another GM today, and he said, you know what? It's one of the best jobs in hockey. And I said, I know that. So I hope I'm there 15 years. I hope this is the last gig.
Who have you heard from? Players, and you've worked with the military. You've done some great volunteer work there that I've witnessed firsthand, and you've been just beautiful on that side of it. But you've heard from everybody, eh?
Yeah, everybody. It's not too many of the players yet, but players on other teams that I've been friendly with over the years, and to a man, Phil Kessel sent me a lovely note. Hey, good luck. He even told me where I should live, because he.
Oh, really?
There. Yeah. Guys like that, Eric Johnson, who I've had in the U.S. program, a lot of guys I'm friendly with. Kevin BX has been great. So a lot of guys that played for me have already sent a note or a text. Every GM in the league pretty well, several owners. So I think people know that as much as I like the TV work, this is what I do. This is what makes my, stirs my blood. And me yelling at the TV again is a much better picture for people, I think.
As I say goodbye to you here, I sent Colby Armstrong a note. I said, you can't shake Berkey. You're together in Toronto. He buys you out. Now you're in Pittsburgh, and he's coming to Pittsburgh with you.
Yeah, and Randy Hillier, my old client. Oh, yeah. Boston, the old defenseman. He's an old client of mine. He's in Pittsburgh. I'm looking forward to seeing him.
I enjoyed watching you on TV. It was great to watch that studio and see you in that environment that I was so familiar with. But I'm really excited about this next chapter and watching you work with Sid and Ron and that group in Pittsburgh and Mario as well. So good luck, and thanks for doing this, because it's obviously a busy time for you. You're getting recognized all the way around the street, so I had to worm my way in somehow.
Yeah, well, it is a busy time, but happy to join you. Thank you.
I'm telling you, I have Bobby bring Bobby Bender, Robert Bob Bender, back in. I have had a lot of interactions with Brian over the years. He's yelled at me at times. Sometimes it's been my fault. Sometimes I think he's overreacted. He's worked with my wife at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. I've gone on trips to Afghanistan with Brian, where we've played. I covered it and was the MC for ball hockey games against the troops, like just goodwill trips during the Afghanistan war. I've done a lot of things with Brian. That is just a cool conversation, the most legit conversation I've ever had. So I really appreciate it. But one part that jumped out at me was he admits his presence in Pittsburgh causes anxiety for people. There's not a lot of people that can just walk into a room and your blood pressure kind of goes up, mm-hmm. but he's one of those guys, right?
Well, it was funny because you said, do you think people are nervous? And right away he says they should be nervous. I mean, a new sheriff in town, we're evaluating everything. And I thought that was pretty funny and telling, sort of the personality he is and the presence he is and the success that he's had. So, players in Pittsburgh, it certainly gets to your attention.
Yeah, like Steve Sullivan's won two Stanley Cups as the head coach.
Right.
And he and Brian says, yeah, they should be nervous. The players should be nervous. So here's the thing. This is a special job for somebody like Ron Hextall and Brian Burke, but it's also a job that's really suited for them because they are intense and they don't, not back down from a challenge, but they really embrace it. I don't blame Chris Drury or Jason Bottrell, who took their names out of the running for the Pittsburgh job, for not wanting anything to do with this position. Because you, if you say you had the job for 5-6 years, like the average length of a job, you're going to oversee the exit of Letang, Malkin, and probably Crosby. Do you want that? Do you want to have to go through that? Like, part of it is you have a chance to win right now, but the other part of it on the back end is a real headache and a real challenge. And quite frankly, I don't want that on my business card. Now, Berkey and Hextall don't care, but I wouldn't want that. And I understand why some people just didn't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole.
I get it. Very, very difficult decisions to be made. And that's why we're going to go inside Darren's mind right now on this episode. Where do you start when you're trying to figure out what to do with this team going forward? How do you handle the now? And you don't have any draft picks. You don't have much capital to wheel and deal. It's difficult. Where do you start?
Well, let's start in goal. I think that they're solid there in the sense of they don't have a lot of wiggle room. So the idea that they were going to trade for Marc-Andre Fleury, that wasn't going to happen. And not because of Fleury and anything to do with Vegas or his good start or where he was in the offseason. It has to do with Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh can't move enough money to acquire that. And Vegas can't take on or keep any salary because they're too tight to the cap. It just doesn't work from a salary cap perspective. Never mind being able to pry Marc-Andre out of Vegas right now when he's off to a sensational opening quarter of the season and what you might have to give up. The compensation just isn't there. So they have to dance with the one that they brought in Jari and DeSmith. What I would do going forward with this is try to win this year as much as you can wiggle. But after this year, if I'm Ron Hextall, I'm Brian Burke, I go straight to Malkin and Crosby and I say, you go if you want to go. And if you want to stay, we'll sign you to the contract that works for you and the organization. But this is your one chance. If you want to go and you want to win after this year, because we're like, it's no news here that they're going to have to retool in the next couple of years. If you want to keep winning, we'll make that happen for you. And we'll take the heat for it. And we'll do everything to shield you from that. But this is your one time. Crosby, Malkin, this is your one time. If you stay, then we're in control. And it may not be pretty. Like, look at Chicago. Look at some of these teams that have gone through rebuilds, Detroit, after their massive success. It may not be pretty for you. But you're going to have to suck that up and you're going to have to deal with that. Do I think that they would be able to? For sure. But I would give them a get out of Pittsburgh card that I will take the heat for after this year. And listen, the return for Pittsburgh, if Malkin or Crosby were dealt away, would be significant. So their legacy will be rebuilding the Pittsburgh Penguins. So it's going to work out whether Crosby stays or Crosby goes for the Pittsburgh Penguins. But I want to deal with it this offseason. And what do the players want to do? I'll take the heat. But after this offseason, I'm in charge. And I want those players to know that. That's the way I would deal with it if I was general manager.
You want to nip it in the bud. It's funny. I always thought that Crosby was a one sweater player and he still may be, right? But you give him the opportunity to, like you said, get out of Pittsburgh. If he wants to win some more, he's already cemented his legacy as far as Stanley Cups go. It would be interesting to see what Crosby would decide to do, because there's just certain players. It's very difficult. Derek Jeter in baseball, where he's going to put another jersey on. We'll see. That'll be interesting. I think you're right though. And how you handle it.
I will say this, the whole one sweater thing, with all due respect to you and your Yankees and different players, it's a fallacy. It's a joke. I've never bought into it. Mm-hmm. Ray Bourque moved on. I don't think of Ray Bourque as a Colorado Avalanche. Marty Brodeur moved on. There's Wayne Gretzky moved on. We don't think of the St. Louis era, but he did. He played for St. Louis. There's a lot of guys that Matt Sundin played for the Vancouver Canucks. Win. Players who hold on just to play in the same organization, I think are shortchanging themselves. Now, Pittsburgh is different because Crosby's already won there. So you can hang on. But I would give him more credit if he said, I want to keep winning and moved on. Then I want to finish my career as a Pittsburgh Penguin. That's just my opinion. I'm shallow though. Have you noticed? I'm a little shallow.
Fair enough. You're right. It doesn't really matter. I mean, if Wayne Gretzky can be traded a bunch of times and moved to different teams, he's still the greatest of all time. You're right. It's a little overrated, or it really doesn't matter, like you said.
Like Doug Gilmore played for a handful of teams, still a Hall of Famer, and made his mark in some really cool markets. And I think that's also positive in a way. And maybe Sidney Crosby grows the game I'll just throw out teams. Probably shouldn't do that, but I'll throw out like Southern California if he joined one of those rebuilding teams, or the mountains of the Midwest. Wouldn't that be cool with the two guys that do the commercials for Tim Hortons? Wouldn't that be neat? The commercials that they could come up with. So there's my take on it. Marc-Andre Fleury. Can I just say another tie into Sidney Crosby has to be the comeback player of the year for the opening quarter. I mean, he's 7-1. He has only lost start is a 1-0 decision to the Anaheim Ducks. And while he's technically still on a rotation with Robin Leonard got hurt. So Marc-Andre had to start a bunch of games in a row. He is the guy that has the edge right now. He lost his seat last year in the playoffs. And he's come back, tweaked his game. He's playing a little more conservative depth-wise in the net, not to get too technical on everything. But boy, oh boy, if there's ever a guy that you want to root for and that you see coming out of this, he's off to his best start ever in the desert. And they've had three pretty good seasons with the Vegas Golden Knights. I know people follow him, people track him, but I think it's worth a mention right now what he's doing.
You took the words right out of my mouth. He's the easiest player to root for. And I love, 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 love the fact that he's playing so well. Here's a question for you. I agree with you. First quarter of the season, comeback player of the year. Can Marc-Andre Fleury, obviously has to keep up this play. Can he win the Vezina this year? Tough because of the two-pronged goalie situation that is in Vegas.
Well, I think he can outdistance the holdback from the rotation because of who he is. He's a future Hall of Famer. Everybody knows. And in a weird way, Bob, I think what he went through last summer and the attention that got will help build up a groundswell of support this year for him. And I think that the tough time actually benefits him in propping him up a little bit. I would say it's tough to keep this up, especially with somebody like Vasilevsky, who I think is the best goaltender in the game right now, to outdistance him. What I would do, though, Bob, this year for the Vezina Trophy, now that you bring it up, I'll give you my idea. I think for this year, each division should nominate one finalist. So in other years, we have three finalists for each award, and then you pick the winner from that. Each division nominates one finalist, and then the GMs pick from those four finalists. I think Marc-Andre being a finalist, I think he's the best goaltender in the division right now. And then putting him up against Vasilevsky and maybe pulling on the heartstrings a little bit would give him a real shot. I didn't think it was possible. I would have said it was impossible for Marc-Andre Fleury to contend for a Vezina. But through a 56-game season, where the body of work doesn't have to be as large, and a rotation where it keeps him fresh, it's convincing me to come closer to that line.
He could be in the mix. He's certainly in the mix right now. If you were to put together the candidates right now in the middle of February, he's definitely right atop the list. Are you ready for, I'm stealing the name of this from Scott Van Pelt. I'm just going to full disclosure.
I love Scotty.
Who doesn't love Scott Van Pelt, Stanford Steve? They do a great job on their show nightly on ESPN. Until we get a better name for this, we're going to steal it directly from them. Boo woo. Okay. Boo, you don't like it. Yep. Woo, let's go, baby. I love it.
You probably didn't have to explain that to me. You know that.
For the listeners, you know, we have listeners. Maybe they're not fans of Scott Van Pelt. For the listener, as always, for the listeners, the gold helmets. Boo or woo?
I woo. Because they were so different. And I mentioned earlier, I didn't know that was happening I talked to the chief marketing officer for the Golden Knights, Brian Killingsworth, when the gold sweaters first came out, and the idea of gold helmets came up in the discussion. And I wouldn't say he pushed it aside, but he didn't go, that's a possibility. He's great at keeping secrets. So this was obviously percolating before, but when they came out, it was in a stretch where the Golden Knights were wearing their reverse retro sweaters, and then they were wearing their gold sweaters. So I never anticipated that in a string of different uniforms that they would throw something else at us. And yeah, they were as different as you are going to see in the National Hockey League. And dare I say, brave by the Golden Knights to do it. It was the talk of the night in the NHL mm-hmm. when they did it against the Anaheim Ducks. Again, getting texts from everywhere, from all my buddies and general managers and coaches and people around the league. What do you think of those? I like them. I'd like to see them with the gold sweaters.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. I was going to give them a woo. I was going to do a double woo. If you pair those golden buckets with the golden sweaters that they wore on Sunday night, oh my goodness, that is what I want to see. I like the golden helmets, and I'm a fan of Notre Dame. I love the golden helmets for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. I loved it. And the fact that they kept it a secret and it wasn't publicized or you didn't see anything on social media beforehand made it even better.
So remember when ads on helmets was the big controversy and the big discussion?
Mm-hmm.
That was so 2020. Now gold helmets take over. I'm looking forward to it. I hope they keep wearing them. And I think it'll be, I mean, LA wore the shiny chrome helmets for an outdoor game. Never wore them for a regular game. I think you can do it and add a little bit of flair and who knows, does it grab an extra fan's attention or two? Does it make the conversation about our game a little bit more mainstream? Gets people talking without changing the fabric of the game. And I'm all for that. I would like to have been in the room though when the players saw them, mm-hmm. like, 'cause you know how conservative our game is. The players, I'm sure that there was a mix there going, really? We're going out there. But it was cool to watch from my perch at T-Mobile Arena and the players jumping on the boards and the reflection of it. I liked it. I hope they do it again. And I do hope that they wear them with either the red, the reverse retro red, or the gold helmets. Here's a stat for you though. This might be a little too inside Vegas, but last week, Dylan Coughlin is a young defenseman for the Golden Knights, and he made his National Hockey League debut. And in the first four games that he played in the National Hockey League, he wore four different uniform setups. Like, talk about trying to get your head around everything.
And I'll say that wouldn't have happened back in the 80s, right? You got your two unis and away you go. Now in this day and age, you got the third jersey, the retro jersey, home and away, all the different, which I don't mind. I'll get behind all different jerseys, but yeah, that's funny trying to get your bearings, right? You're in the, with the big club, you get your bearings and you're changing jerseys. And you know, maybe he's superstitious. Maybe he has a great game, right? With the first jersey and then he's got to switch over. These players are so superstitious. You mentioned something in the tease. Talk about this Mika Zibanejad,
yeah,
and this Brad Marchand scenario.
Oh, you saw that?
MSG. I did.
So paper, rock, scissors to see who has to leave the ice first. And Tyler Seguin's into that kind of thing. He's very superstitious about it. But they play paper, rock, scissors. Are you a paper, rock, scissors guy, or are you rock, paper, scissors? First of all, how do you say it?
Paper, rock, scissors here on the East Coast.
I do too. Good. Thank goodness. What's your go-to?
I'm always probably throwing out the hammer rock.
Yeah, I'm good old reliable rock too. If you tie, do you go back to rock, or are you somebody that changes it up?
I'm trying to go back to my school bus days. I always would throw out the rock. You're right. Probably first and second to try to throw a curveball. Yeah.
And I lose more than I win on the retry, but watching those two do that was fascinating. And again, some personality in the game. And I loved it. Part of me is like, we have two of the world's best players here and they're playing paper, rock, scissors to make sure that they have a good game.
It got to the point where the Zamboni was coming out on Brad Marchand's tunnel. Someone had to make a decision there. I mean, it got a little ridiculous. They were both. I thought it was fascinating, though, that they went right to paper, rock, scissor, you know, across the rink. They mouthed it to each other, got it done. That's hockey players for you. That was fun.
And this is obviously like they just don't come up with this. They know that the other guy is like that. And they're doing the whole pregame warmup. In the back of their mind, they're trying to plan the paper, rock, scissors strategy. It's spectacular. And it's just a different part of our game. And I love it. That part is different. You've got the gold helmets that are different. And now you've got the Tahoe experience, Bobby. What's the thing that you're looking forward to the most this coming weekend about the Tahoe experience?
I'm just looking forward to watching it on TV. And I think the scenery, Lake Tahoe, if you've ever been there, it's unbelievable. If you haven't been there, get there any time of year. I went in the summer. I've been in the winter. My sister's in San Francisco. She's always going. I always just piggyback on you know, I'm a freeloader there. What I'm looking forward to most is just, you know, seeing the scenery. And I think it's going to be cool to sort of have these players who they all grew up playing on the pond and playing outdoors, just be in the natural element. It should be a lot of fun. I think as far as scenery and aesthetics go, I mean, you can't beat it.
It's going to be the most spectacular outdoor game we've ever seen because of the scenery, but it also is a game. And I go back to that John Cooper interview in episode one, where he didn't want to give COVID any type of credit, but I'm not sure that you can build enough seating to make it financially viable on that 18th green and the resorts. So this might be a one-off because you can do it because you don't have fans, and it's sort of a byproduct of being restricted. And whether we want to embrace it or give COVID credit, that's up to you. But I think it's making the best and the most out of a terrible situation. And it's a little bonus for us to be able to see something like this.
And I work at the National Hockey League, but I know there's a lot of people and a lot of resources that have gone into figuring out how to do this Lake Tahoe. They looked at other sites. And so I'm just happy that it got off the ground. And like you said, it probably is a once in a lifetime thing, because you're not going to hold a game where you can't have a lot of fans there in the future. Yeah. So embrace it, enjoy it, be there, watch both games, check it out on television. And again, if you're trying to turn someone into a hockey fan, plant that person in front of the TV for the Vegas Golden Knights and the Avalanche game outdoors at Lake Tahoe. Not, what could be better than that?
Nothing. With those mountains in the background, absolutely nothing. Before we go, anything else on your mind? Because I know that we wanted to talk about work boots, but is there anything else going on in the back of that mind of yours?
You know, we're going to have to hold this segment till next week. It's Darren's creme de la creme. Let's call it a little teaser here, teaser. Okay. And it could be anything. It could be, you know, the best thing you've seen recently, you know, a quality piece of food that you had that you want to tell people about. Mine this week, well, now we're talking about it. Mine this week, real quick, was Vancouver wearing the work boots into their game. They wanted to put the work boots on. They all showed up with work boots and they go do it. They put the work boots on, but then they go win the game. And that's the best part, is that they actually won the game against Calgary after coming into the arena, all of them wearing work boots, ready to put their work boots on to play a solid game. As we know, they've been struggling, and they go win the game. So I thought that was a pretty neat thing.
Do you have work boots? What's the closest thing you have to work boots?
You know, I got snow. I got, you know, I was out there with the snowblower a couple weeks ago or last week. I got snow boots. I do not have work boots. I'll say
when that. Was the last time you owned a pair of work boots?
I don't know. I mean, maybe
I've never.
Maybe
never.
I was
steel, fed nothing with a, steel-toed.
Yeah, maybe I was fed with a silver spoon. I don't have work boots, but I'm also not a blue collar guy. So there you have it.
I think the Canucks won the game because they thought in the back of their minds, as they were walking in with the work boots on, they're thinking, if we don't win this game, do you know how silly we're going to feel leaving the rink exactly. in these boots. Exactly. We got to make this happen. So good on Travis Green. He's one of my my favorite guys and that team for putting forth a great performance. I hope you enjoyed the Brian Burke conversation. Leave us a rating. Subscribe to the podcast. We want to hear from you. So while you're listening to this, please just slide over and give us any type of time that you have, 10 seconds, 20 seconds, whatever. It does go a long way. And Bob puts such an amazing amount of time, and everybody at the NHL, a lot of time into this project. And I think if you can just do that little bit to help us out, because it goes a long way. And next week, we'll chat about the outdoor game and reflect on what happened on the shores of Lake Tahoe, Bob.
Absolutely. Enjoy the rest of the week. Listeners, do what Darren says. You can't go wrong if you do what Darren says. Leave a review, subscribe, click play, hit us up. We'll get back to Chirp Mallard next week, hopefully. And enjoy the games in Tahoe, as Darren said. Wrap it up, Darren.
I wish my kids did exactly what I say on just maybe 50% of the time. Fun conversation. Thanks to Brian Burke. Thanks to Bob. And thanks to you for listening. It's such a privilege to be here with you on a weekly basis. And we'll see who we can track down next week on The Chirp with Darren Millard.